are listening to Putnam Proud, a podcast about the Putnam County Charter School System in Edenton, Georgia. Our shows will highlight the school system, families, teachers, staff, and the community.
Hey everyone, welcome to season three of the Putnam Proud podcast. And I've got a cool opportunity for you to learn about a former student of Putnam County, as well as a resident of Putnam County, and as well as a student taught and worked here. And we got some cool stuff, and he's in between all parts of the world. And we're calling this, I traded my cow for a camel, and you'll understand more when he talks. And so we have with us today Mr. Kamario Twilley. Say hi to everybody.
Hello, hello.
And we have Mr. Eric Arena, superintendent.
Morning, Steve.
Awesome. So it's great to have you here, guys, and we got an incredible talk that's going to happen. So Kamario, Mr. K?
Mr. K.
Mr. K. All right. Well, welcome back, and I understand it's brief, so we're going to get to why it's brief in just a second, but let's talk about a little bit of your history. Can you start with you as a child and being here in Putnam County?
I started my foundational years here in Putnam. I am, you can say, a product of Putnam. I started Head Start, kindergarten, first, pre-K, second grade. Went out for a little while. Father was in the military. Came back during college to do some student teaching. Was hired as a KG teacher. Did that for 4 years. Taught technology for 2 years. And then I headed to the Middle East.
And when we say Middle East, you don't mean like, Central North America, right?
No, I headed to the UAE, or as most people know, Dubai.
Very cool. So, you know, when I got to ask this, so let's talk a little bit about your student teaching for a minute and your experience to come back here, because your traveling takes you around a little bit, and then you end up coming back here to work. Why did you become a teacher?
It was not a plan to become a teacher, I'm going to be honest. My parents, my entire life, you like kids, you should become a teacher. I thought I wanted to become a lawyer. Did my undergraduate, did a internship at a law firm in Atlanta. After the first day, I said, oh no, this is not for me. So I started doing some volunteer work at the school that my mom worked at. And I just fell in love with the little kids. So I was like, oh, maybe they're onto something. So I started looking into some master's programs. And that's how I got into teaching.
That's cool. So so you started teaching, and what level did you work with? And
I worked with KG, kindergarten. So I was mostly early childhood, KG for those 4 years, and technology was KG through second. But my preference is kindergarten.
Nice, nice. So while you're teaching kindergarten, somewhere in there you get this thought, I think I need to see part of this world. So can you tell us a little bit about making that shift?
It was during COVID. The world had shut down. I'm looking around. Everything is very kind of scary at that point. You don't know what's going to happen next. And, you know, you're doing reflecting over your life. Should I be doing this? Shouldn't I be doing this? Is this really what I want to do? Should I be living here? Or do I really want to live here? So this opportunity came along, and I was really conflicted up until the day of the flight. I think I spoke to Mr. Arena about it. I spoke to Dr. Aker, Dr. Rogers at the time. Well, Dr. Harris at the time, but Dr. Rogers now. And everyone was like, do it. You can always come back. We'll let you come back. If you get there and you don't like it, we'll let you come back. So with their pushing and my father's pushing, I decided, why not? Let's see what's going to happen.
Oh, that's cool. So, I gotta get you to talk about this for a second, because if no one's who's listening, you know, some of our listeners are going to be from the area, they're going to be from the state, they might be from some other states around. One of the things that this area of Georgia is very well known for is it has a couple of really large lakes and lots of pine trees and deer and things like that that go with it. So, did you have lots of big lakes where you were going? Pine trees and
No, mostly desert, sand. Actually, I was blessed enough to live in a town called Ras Al Khaimah, which we call Rack for short, but it was on the ocean, but no lakes, no trees.
Wow.
No deers, no cows.
nice. I got to imagine that kind of had an impact on you a little bit, because, one of the things we talked about earlier before we started recording was that, this, you're starting to do this traveling in the middle of COVID. And so also your environment changes, which you knew some of that was going to happen. But talk us through a little bit about what was going through your mind when you first went there.
I can still remember in the airport, she's a teacher at the elementary school now, Dr. Thomas. I actually spoke to her right before I got on the plane. And like my emotions were everywhere still. I was like, am I making the right choice? Like, what am I thinking? And I guess it really hits you when you're sitting there in the airport thinking, am I going crazy? Should I really be sitting? Should I call my parents to come pick me up? I don't think I should go. And I remember her saying that, you have to take advantage of these opportunities because sometimes in life they only come once and you have to make the most of them. So that kind of settled me a little, just a little. So my first thought was in New York, and I remember walking down the terminal to Emirates. I'm looking at all the faces around me. I'm like, they don't look like me. None of them look like me. I'm not used to this. So I'm still kind of like antsy. I remember calling my father, and he was saying like, it'll be fine. It'll be okay. If you want to come home, you can always come home. But I need you to go see, because if you don't, you're going to come home and you're going to say to yourself, what coulda, shoulda been. So I actually get on the plane. I get there. After 14 hours, we land. I still remember August 15th. We land at 1 o'clock in the morning. And the first thing that hits me is the heat walking out of the airport, like just dripping with sweat at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I'm looking around, and it's hundreds of people around me. And it's really starting to set in again, like, should I really be in the Middle East during COVID? Because you don't see any faces. Everyone's face is covered, so you see their eyes. Should I really be here, or should I be at home? Like, should I just wait? It's too late. And my driver drives up. I'm looking for Mr. Camardio. Mr. Camardio, are you Mr. Camardio? Yes, I'm Mr. Camardio. Loads my bags, and we start going to the school, accommodations, and, the skyline melts. You see the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world, and, that melts away, and the skyscrapers melt away, and I'm like, it's just desert sand. And I'm thinking, like, where are they taking me? Who do I call if something happens? Like, what's going on? Like, am I really doing this? And I remember he turns to me, he asks me, did I want something to eat before we get to the accommodations, because it's going to be late. I don't know if I'm going to be able to order food. I remember getting there. I mean, he unloaded me. He took all my bags up. And I just remember looking out the window, and there was a desert behind the accommodations. And there was actually a camel walking across in the moonlight. And that's when it really sat in with me. Like, this is where this new journey starts for me. And I just have to accept it.
So for the listeners, Putnam County is the dairy capital of Georgia.
It is.
So some... within the last 24 hours, you've left the dairy capital of Georgia, and there's this image at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 100 plus degrees in a country that's 14-16 hour flight away from where you took off, and a camel. So you've traded your cow for a camel. And you've signed a contract for 3 years, I believe. Is that correct? You've signed a contract for 3 years.
3 years.
Wow.
But I think the thing that really put me at peace was that next morning. So there's 5 calls to prayer during the day. And the first one is at 5, roughly 5 when the sun's coming up. And to hear that, first it's fear because you don't know what is going on. And when I say there's a mosque on every corner, it's like being in Putnam. Like, there's a church on every corner. There's literally a mosque within walking distance of every community. So when you hear that call of prayer in the morning, the first day, I was terrified because I was like, what is going on? And so, I opened the window to hear it. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And you hear it again a little bit later on in the day, and then I say, okay, I think this is the call of prayer. But after some time, it comes very soothing because, you know, it's a time of peace, a time of reflection. Even though I don't practice Islam, it was a time for me to stop and to reflect. So I do remember that from my first night, from it going from fear to like a time of peace. So
that's cool. The lots of things happening where as you're thinking about the new world that you're in. So tell me, you know, as you started getting accustomed. So are you living in a like a motel, a shelter for students, somebody's home? And then at some point you got to talk about what food you discovered that you like.
So the school, depending on your school, some schools give you a housing allowance and then you just go out and find your own housing. My school, there was actually, we called it a compound. So we had our own market. We had everything on the compound. So we had our own, had my own villa that was on the compound. So they kind of just, which was kind of weird, and we had some reflection about this when before I left. They kind of just put me in the villa because it was COVID. And they said, you're going to be here for 2 weeks, so enjoy, and we'll see you after 2 weeks, and we'll get you tested for COVID, and then we'll let you free. But I was in school housing or a school villa, which was really nice, really fun. But like I said, initially, you know, it's a sensory overload. You know, you see the camels in the back walking through the desert. You hear the call of prayer. You know, there's so much going on around you. You're trying to take it all in and trying to, where do I fit into all of this? So with the food, I think the UAE is kind of different. There's about 10 million people in the country, but only 10% are Emirati. So only 10% or 1 million are locals that are from the country. Most of the population is made of expat. So a lot of their foods is a reflection of the different countries. I would say the largest ethnic group would be from India. So there's a lot of Indian influences. Americans is a very small group. Even though I interacted with a lot of Americans, there's only like 200,000 of us in the entire country. Most of us are tied some type of way to the educational field, which was always, where are you from? The U.S. Oh, you must be doing something with education. Yeah, how do you know that? You Americans, that's what you guys are here for. So most of the food had Indian influences. So those are the type of foods I was drawn to. But it took me a long time. And my friends would tell you, we would go to brunch. I would say chicken nuggets and French fries. And they're like, you are too old to be eating chicken nuggets and French fries everywhere we go. And that was me. I kind of grew out of that, but it was more of the Indian food that kind of I was drawn to at the end of the day.
So you head over there with chicken nuggets and French fries as your culinary go-to meal.
That's my go-to meal.
And you have migrated to curry and vegetarian, or migrated to what? Because if I'm not mistaken, as a teacher, you actually had a housekeeper and a chef and a driver, and so, you had a number of people working in your compound, which is a little different than in Eatonton, right?
So I used to have, she was from the Philippines. I had a housekeeper. She would try to get me to eat some of her local cuisine from the Philippines. I would eat it because she cooked it, but I wasn't a big fan of it, but I did. I had a housekeeper. I had a someone that came in and cooked. Literally, all I have to do is get up in the morning, go to work, and come home. As we talked about, that soft life kind of spoiled me a little bit. But it was a different life, really different. It took me some time to get accustomed to because I'm used to doing everything for myself. So that was kind of hard to depend on someone to cook for me, someone to come clean for me, someone to wash, fold clothes for me, for someone to go get my laundry from the cleaners and bring it back to me, someone to deliver groceries and put them up for me before I come home. That was because I felt like, shouldn't I be doing this? But I did enjoy it, but it was something I had to get used to. So
gotcha. So let's talk about what you're doing there. So you've gone there. To be there on a contract for 3 years, and at some point, thanks to the, you know, once we get beyond the interference of COVID, you know, you get introduced to what you're going to do for work. So could you talk about that a little bit?
I was the e-learning administrator at the school. So I was over all of the e-learning curriculum and over the IT department. And I did a little bit of discipline for KG through 5, depending who was there that day. Mostly KG to 2nd, I dealt with discipline. Besides COVID, very rewarding. It was challenging. You know, there's a language barrier. We had a school of about 3,000 students, K through 12. Most of our kids, English second language learners. So that was the entire school. So that was that barrier there. But other than that, same, but different. same, like here, but a little bit different.
Nice. All right, Kamario. You grew up and did your foundational in Putnam, and then you're military brat. You've described yourself, and you sort of moved all over. Where are some of the places that you grew up and that you moved around with your family?
We started in Texas, in Killeen. Went to Alaska. We went to Savannah or Fort Stewart, which is outside of Savannah. Spent a little time in Virginia, and then we headed to Europe for about 4 to 5 years. We were in a city called Hanau, which is right outside of Frankfurt. We're in Hanau, Stuttgart, and Bashkirchnock. So we kind of moved around Europe, Germany a little bit. And we headed back to Savannah. And that's where I graduated high school. And my parents decided to retire in Atlanta, or Metro Atlanta. So
awesome. So, all right. So one of the things you just described was two states that are definitely different from each other, which is you went from Texas to Alaska. Now, do you have any fond memories or different memories that are associated with that move?
I don't remember Alaska, but I remember, and it's crazy, I remember this thing, I just remember Texas. I remember, and my dad would probably laugh, but they had this red car where the lights kind of came up like a ladybug.
Yes.
And I just remember him always parking in the parking lot at the apartment complex by a cactus. And I don't know why I remember that, but I do remember that being in Killeen.
Nice. That's cool.
So from Eatonton, cows to camels. So let's talk a little bit about education. You taught here in Putnam. You know, you taught for 5-6 years. You did kindergarten and you did technology. Mm-hmm. And then you go over and you're in a K-5 school environment, K-12 school environment for 3 years. Talk about some of the similarities and some of the differences, because these students in the UAE are local immigrants. So English is their second language. Mm-hmm. So talk about some of the similarities and differences between what you grew up with or what we're familiar with as a public education system versus what you got to experience for those 36 months that you were there.
So first thing I noticed being in a K-12 school, because I was primarily with a K-2. So that was a culture shock dealing with older kids. But one of the things that really stands out when you walk into an MRID school is that the kids are separated after 4th grade based on gender. So in 5th grade, girls are all in this classroom together and all the boys. After they leave elementary, they go to a boys' school. It's just all boys. And then there's a girls' school that's strictly girls.
Is the curriculum the same? It's just separated by gender, or is there the curriculum different?
The curriculum's the same. We were an American Common Core based on the Colorado standard. So those were the same. We were an IB school also. But I think a lot of the differences was cultural. Like for me, I was not allowed to go into the girls' school unless I let the girls' school principal know I'm coming. And she would come across the intercom and tell them, Mr. Kamario is entering the building. So they would have to go get their shalas, which is the local dress to cover their hair. As a male that's not part of their family, I'm not supposed to be able to see their hair. So I have to give them time to cover themselves. And the boys' school was just wow. It was kind of a frat house. That's what it reminded me of. I love my boys. I love them dearly. But the boys' school was just wow. It was a fun wow. It was a really energetic wow, but it was a stressful wow. So that's something that stood out to me. The younger kids, KG school, same.
But different.
I do remember, technically, men are not supposed to teach KG. They're not allowed to teach KG in the UAE.
They're not allowed to teach kindergarten.
Males are not supposed to teach between KG and second. No, KG and first, I'm sorry. But we had an incident with COVID where COVID went through the school, and I had to teach a class. And I remember I was in a KG class. I had to get a teacher's assistant to come in with me because I was a male. I needed a woman in there with me. Remember teaching the class the entire day. And I remember the next day, a dad comes to the school. I'm looking for this Mr. Camario. I'm like, oh, my God, please, please. I don't have time for this today. So I go out. I introduce myself. And that day, luckily, I had on a candora. So I had on the local dress as he did.
So tell me what a candora is now.
It's the local garb, usually white. Kind of looks like a dress, but it's not. It's really cool.
Like linen kind of?
Or cotton, really thin. Okay. You wear, of course, you wear clothes under it so you can't see through it. And then there's something called a guthra that we place over our head. Okay. So I happened to have that on that day.
Okay.
And I walked to the lobby. And the first question he asked me, who are your people? I was like, who are my people? Are you from Abu Dhabi, Fujairah, Ajman, Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah? Who are your people? I said, my people are in Georgia. The country, Georgia? No. Atlanta, Georgia. No. Your father has to be from here somewhere. He thought I was local. But he said, but anyway, my son said you taught him. I just wanted to come see who you were because we know men don't teach children. They need that. I tried to tell them they need that. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, thank you. And I remember more parents coming in. So the kids enjoyed it. The parents enjoyed it. But there is a cultural shift that has to happen first. Just like if you don't really see, I think I was the only male that has ever taught kindergarten in Putnam County. And I think Mr. Swain is the only male that has ever taught Head Start. They're working through that cultural part of it. And we have to also remember their educational system is only 30 years old. The country is only 50 years old. So we have to give them time to kind of mature and grow. But same, but different. Like I said, the boys' school,
So let me ask you this then. On the girls' school side, are all the teachers female?
All the teachers are female.
And on the boys' side, are they all male?
So female teachers can teach the boys.
Okay.
So now we had issues where, particularly when we're talking about IB and college courses, where we may have only a male teacher that can teach physics. So now we have to get the parents to agree. For the daughters to be
able to have a male physics teacher or in the international baccalaureate mm-hmm. say, okay.
And then we have to go to the Ministry of Education mm-hmm. to get them to also sign off on it.
So the government has to sign off as well. Wow. Yeah, so, okay.
Like I said, at first I used to get really frustrated because I'm used to, let's do it, let's get it done. But then I have to remember there's a cultural differences that I have to acknowledge and adhere to. And at the end of the day, this is their country. I'm here to help them, not to take over at the end of the day. So
let me ask you this question. At the school, did they provide breakfast, sausage biscuits, and lunch, chicken nuggets, and french fries? Or were the families supposed to bring their own food? How does that work?
So the demographics of the school, it's Emirates National School, is a very solid upper middle or upper class type of students. We did offer lunch. I ate the lunch. Lunch was really good. But most of our kids did not eat the lunch. Most of the kids brought their own lunch. Just to give you a reference point, I remember my second day, I had to do car duty, and it's August, and it's outside. In the morning at 7 o'clock, it's 90 degrees. So I'm looking for the buses to come in. I'm like, where do the buses come in? And they point. But they said, well, you don't need to be down there. You need to be down here. Like, it can't be that many students that are coming in cars. But most of the kids, they have drivers, have their own personal drivers. I would say out of the 3,000 students, maybe 95% of them, personal drivers. I remember my mouth dropped the first day, the Lamborghinis, the Bentleys, the Rolls Royces. And it was just like nothing to the kids. And like for
just,
me,
just like Putnam County.
And that also was kind of an awakening for me. I'm in a different place. I'm in a very different place. So,
So what about, like, exploratories or connection classes or specials? Did the kids, from a curriculum standpoint, reading, writing, and arithmetic, I get that. You also mentioned something about a religion class that they're required to do. Anything else from the arts, humanities, anything else that they're getting exposed to?
So KG students, KG through fifth, take swimming classes as part of the curriculum. They have to know how to swim before they leave KG. So that was something that's really, that kind of shocked me. It was really, really pushed on them. First grade, all the kids take violin. Like, you don't have a choice. Like, everyone's going to take that class. After first grade, they take a test. I forgot what they call it. And it kind of places them what instrument, but everyone has to play an instrument up until fifth grade. So you don't have a choice. Violin, first grade, to learn the basics. After that, will kind of place you where you need to go, but everyone's going to play an instrument.
That's wild. I got to ask, because I started playing trumpet when I was in fourth grade, and I stayed with trumpet through, I mean, I can pick it up now. So do they have lots of other instruments, or is just kind of the string focus on the traditional?
Most of our boys kind of went towards the drums, just to be honest.
Okay, we're good.
But the violin, some of them stuck with it because of their parents. Because I remember some parents used to come in, if we paid this much for a violin, mister, he is going to learn how to play. I understand. I get it. Because it blew my mind, because I would see some of them dragging them at Car Rider, dragging them on the sidewalk. Like, no, pick that up. Please pick that up. Please pick that up. But they get a... you have a choice, per se, but you're going to play an instrument. So...
Oh, that's cool. That's the awesome stuff. So we got to talk about the Car Rider line again, because this is fascinating to me. Because, you know, our worlds are this. You know, like you said, you know, there's some things very same, right? And we have unique things. I mean, I've spent my time at a Car Rider line for high school kids, and you know, and you're out there and you're talking, you know, you're having to have conversations about, you know, partly what you use the Car Rider line is to say hi and advertise that we got a PTA meeting coming up, or we got something, you know, big coming up, and we really want you to be there, and or to hand the flyers and stuff like this, and then to keep them sane as they're, you know, driving and trying to go left where they should only go right or something like this. Talk about that. You got to talk about that experience.
So Car Riders, it used to take us about 45 minutes to get them all out of the school. Our Car Riders, because it's COVID, parents were not allowed into the school. The drivers are not allowed into the school. So we had a ticket system. But it was just interesting to see just the type of cars. I remember I had a little boy tell me, he was a little fifth grade, Mr. Camario, I drive Lexus. I said, you drive it home? Yes, I drive it home. So, you know, I asked the driver, I said, you know, Muhammad says he drives it home. And he was like, yeah, mister, he does. Do you know he found my email? Took a picture of himself driving in the sand dune in his Lexus, fifth grader, nice. Emailed it to me.
Nice.
So I think Car Riders was a place to kind of build those relationships, but we really couldn't build relationship with parents because most parents weren't picking up kids. It was mostly the drivers picking up kids.
I gotcha.
So that was a time to kind of joke with Abdullah and Khalifa and kind of see, how is the day going? Why don't you like miss? Why do you have to come see me every day? Why don't you just sit down sometimes? Those were those times to kind of build those relationships. I wish more parents would have came in to build those relationships, but the dynamics were just different. In addition to that, some women were very, because of the cultural differences, they're very reserved to talking to men. So, like, the female administrators would be better suited to interact with parents, particularly if moms are coming in, because they're more inept to talk to that woman than necessarily a male.
What a neat sort of lesson, experience, I guess, my point.
It was eye-opening. I'll never forget, I put my hand out to one of the moms, maybe my first week there. She said, no, mister, no, put your hand down. She said, I can't shake your hand. I took offense at first. But after talking to people, they were like, no, it's a cultural thing, you know, because you're not part of her family and you're a male, you're not allowed to touch her. and she's not allowed to touch you. But the dads will come in because you guys are males. He can touch you and you can touch him. You embrace, but you're not allowed to touch her. She's not allowed to touch you.
Hey, hope you're enjoying this talk with Kamario on the Putnam Proud podcast. Join us next week for the conclusion as we hear about his next journey. So much to learn. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Putnam Proud. Do you know someone who hasn't listened to Putnam Proud yet? It would be awesome if you shared this show with a friend, colleague, community member, family, everyone you know. The Putnam Proud podcast is created for educational purposes. All opinions are those of guest and host. Thanks for listening.